Well, that's a very interesting question. I have been informed that I am no longer Eeyore. What would Eeyore say to Optimus Prime, and what would Optimus Prime say back? Hello, Optimus. Hello, Eeyore. I just found out not gonna be me anymore.
Meet Grimlock King.
Welcome to The Pull Bags, Back Issue Classics. Join us as we talk about comics from yesteryear, from DC, Marvel, and more. So open your ears to hear our discussion of the older continuities, as the Back Issue Classics are also what's in The Pull Bag.
Hello and welcome to The Pull Bag. This is yet again another Autobotly April episode, Back Issue Classics, episode 85. I am, of course, TF2 and Mike. Joining me is Ryan, the Anime Club Merkley. Hello, sir.
Yo.
And today we head down to the place where 10 can't say your name. I can't believe they did that. Oh, God. I knew it was coming, but I just can't believe they did that.
But that's volume 9.
I know, that's later, but still.
Or sorry, no, it is the end of 8, right? Anyway.
Yeah, it's one of them damn things.
No, it's the end of 8, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're here to talk about More Than Meets the Eye, volumes 8 and 9. And, wow, I cannot believe some of the stuff that they let Roberts get away with in this comic. Oh, God.
Well, they start with the serious and then go into the self-indulgent later.
Yes. The serious stuff all revolves around the Decepticon Justice Division.
Yep. Yeah, we open the first issue is a... It's one that focuses on the DJD, essentially during the events just after Slaughterhouse, where they find out that, we find out why they were on the planet Ofsted, where Trailbreaker died, which, gee, thanks for that cheerful callback, but anyway... yeah, they discover that the members that they left behind, which we already know this, that Voss and Kaon were still alive, but they go and pick them up, and Tarn discovers Trailbreaker's copy of Megatron's speech, which concedes the war to the Autobots.
Right.
And so the issue revolves around the fact that Megatron is not the person that Tarn
thought he was going to be.
Yeah, well, basically, he's not the Decepticon, or he's not the words that he fell in love with, pretty much. Or that he idolized. And
yeah,
Megatron is a little bit like Soundwave, I think. Tarn probably idolized Megatron more than even the Decepticon cause, although he's definitely pretty strongly at the Decepticon cause.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, I was, I don't know, I was a little, because it's been a while. Like, I'm not like you, I don't go back and reread these all the time. And it's not that I don't want to, it's just I have so much other crap I have to do. So, it's been a while since I've seen a lot with the DJD, and I've known of Tarn and everything else, and how sick of a bastard the entire DJD are, but I...
Although it gets worse in Volume 1-9, don't worry.
I know, anyway. I know it does. I know it does. But I mean, you know, this whole first issue is like, wow, this is just crazy.
I'll start with the nice, well, I mean, I'll finish off the rest of the plot too. So basically Tarn, in an effort to figure out what he wants to do or who he wants to be going forward, meets with Dezorus, who has his own group of Decepticons who have broken away from Megatron a long time ago. In the end, they all decide like they're going to hunt down Megatron and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the bulk of the issue. The stuff I liked, I mean, as usual, the art's really good, but there are a couple nice touches. The scientist who rebuilds Tarn is the same one who rebuilt Shockwave.
Okay.
So that's a nice touch. It's with the artwork. And I turn to think, oh, the opening stuff too I really liked, with the captured Decepticon who has started his own Spark Eater cult.
Right, yeah.
And I actually, I don't know, I liked Tarn's sort of exchange with him up until the point. I mean, they leave his brain in his mouth, by the way, which seems a little harsh. But
yeah,
anyway,
it's extremely harsh.
The stuff I didn't like in this issue, there's a couple of things. One, the Tarn bit at the end of that,
mm-hmm.
where he mentions that, you know, he closes his eyes while the DJD kill or really torture their victims, that kind of thing. Eh. I mean, there's no payoff to that is the problem. Tarn's never shown to really be a decent person or anything after this. I mean, part of this is because I know, you know, his backstory now after I've read volume 50, and I know what happens to him, et cetera, et cetera. So there's not necessarily a payoff to that.
Yeah.
So meh. And then the other thing, I initially didn't like Nickel.
Mm-hmm.
For people who are just listening to this and haven't read it, that kind of thing. Nickel is basically the caretaker. She cleans up after the DJD and fixes them and that kind of thing. But in the end, I ended up really liking her. Although part of that, again, is because I've read stuff forward. But I remember at the time I wasn't a huge fan. Although having said that, it was nice that for the first time, there's a bunch of firsts here that I do really like. She's the first female Decepticon. Next is the first time Dezorus and pretty much most of those Japanese characters have ever been used in the
comics.
American, yeah, in the American comics. So I actually really liked that. Yeah, I mean, that's... I still really like the issue. I like the concept of going home with the DJD. We talk about it because I know you're a fan of it, and I'm a fan of it, too. We talk about the Shield a lot. And one of the things I liked about the Shield was you eventually kind of got to go home with each of those characters. Like, Ronnie was not used very much until the last season. He was just kind of there. We never really went home with the guy.
Yeah.
Didn't know much about him. And so when bad things happened to him, you kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah.
But in the last season, you kind of figure out that, oh, he was just as bad as any of the others. But yeah. But yeah, it was... Yeah, and for Roberts, that must have been tough, because you've got to balance things out. Because, like I said, you know, when you go home with a character, you're going to inevitably learn a lot more about them. And some characters and some stories don't hold up under that.
Yeah. Yeah. For 39, my favorite line out of the issue was, "Don't you ever, ever tell me what Decepticons do and don't do." That is such a Megatron line, though. That's the problem with... Like, I like Tarn. I like Tarn as a character, and it's going to be interesting to see where his story leads and everything. But that line,
Well, actually, oh, sorry,
no, you know what I mean.
No, Tard in a lot of ways is, I mean, Tarn is trying to be Megatron. He's basically Megatron Jr., as gets pointed out to him much later by another character. But, yeah, I liked this a lot in the end. Again, some of it's helped by learning things later on, but that's also kind of more than meets the eye. You learn stuff in pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, the story, I don't want to say it's fragmented, but that's the only term I can think of off the top of my head, but not fragmented in the sense that it makes no sense. Like you said, Roberts is the guy that will write something in issue 5 of the series and then call it back at issue 45. You know, and be like, hey, I remember when that happened. And what I liked about 39 was the fact that we actually see more of the Decepticon side of it, because, let's face it, most of More Than Meets the Eye is the Lost Light. And pretty much all of those guys, except for Megatron at this point, are Autobots.
When they, well, in Ravage, but anyway, and
yeah,
the other thing I should have mentioned regarding Nicol too is when he tells her backstory. I liked that because it was another one of those moments where you realize why somebody would follow the Decepticon cause.
Mm-hmm.
Her backstory is essentially that her planet was killed by organics simply because they were afraid of what they might do. Being that there were Transformers. The Transformers in the IDW series do not have the best reputation amongst anyone.
No.
And Megatron's responsible for an awful lot of that. But yes. Still. Yeah.
And, 39 overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting seeing the other side. And again, coming from reading not Rid, X-Rid, whatever you want to call that series, the Transformers, and reading most of More Than Meets the Eye, and most of it, for the most part, deals with the Autobots and the crew of the Lost Light. So seeing a Decepticon side is very, very cool and interesting. When we get to the next issue, I was like, oh, finally. The Swerve recaps are back. Yes, that works. I love that stuff.
The next issue, if it wasn't for the one at the end of this trade, it'd probably be my favorite issue out of the entire batch.
Mm-hmm.
There are two sort of major plot lines going on. One is the trial for Brainstorm, who was revealed in the previous trade to be a Decepticon.
Yep.
And the other plot line is Ratchet is leaving. And Ratchet is leaving to go find Drift, who was exiled way back in Volume 4, because Rodimus used him as a scapegoat for Overlord being on board.
Yeah. Yeah, and so Ratchet is going to be leaving, and I love how Roberts frames this story of Ratchet's, you know, first, second, third unsuccessful attempts of being able to say goodbye.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, the callbacks there are really good, including seeing Jimmy, or not Jimmy, geez, which one was that? The one who's dead, Hunter. Yeah. Including seeing Hunter, you see, you know, one of the Insecticons in the background.
Mm-hmm.
In that, we see Pharma, who's talking about leaving for Delphi, and we see Roller in another one. So good continuity there. Great continuity with a lot of the discussions at Brainstorm's trial, which was really well done.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything in this issue just worked perfectly.
It did,
Brainstorm's defense of himself, which leads Perceptor to get up and clap for him, was fantastic.
Yeah.
The fact that Megatron is, I mean, Megatron, to be blunt, is sulking, because
he's not at the that's what I love.
Well, he's sulking because he is trying to come to terms with the fact that the nicest member of the crew murdered him back in time.
Yeah.
Condemning their own race to a horrible future because it made the entire galaxy better.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, the entire universe, not galaxy, better. So, oof. Yeah, I would be a little upset by that too.
The best parts of Brainstorm's trial, honestly, it has to do with Rodimus.
Yeah, Rodimus.
I don't know.
With Magnus's nameplate.
I don't know how anybody can hate Rodimus. I really don't.
I do. He's a terrible captain.
Oh, come on. But I'm saying, in the panel where he's trying to get Brainstorm's faceplate to show the Decepticon insignia, I cackled for a good 10 minutes at that.
Yeah, but the thing with we'll get into it, especially in Volume 10, but Rodimus is an awful captain. Megatron is the better captain in every single way.
That's
which is
scary.
One of the reasons why which is one of the reasons why the series works. But anyway, we get Ratchet scenes with 10 that essentially imply that 10 is not the single worded. I don't know how to say this. 10 is not what he appears to be. There's more going on in his head than any of the other Transformers would think. As well as we get the last chunk of it narrated by 10.
My favorite.
Nice touch.
Yeah, before we get to the end of this issue, my favorite. You mentioned earlier that Megatron is off sulking because he's not at the trial. And Ultra Magnus comes up to his... I just love the panel of Megatron opening the door, peeking out, and Ravage just standing there, yes? nothing's going on. That is so hilarious. The other part of this this issue, I believe this has been around, but this is the first time I remember it, really. We have two competing bars. We have Swerves, and we have Visages, which is Mirage's bar.
Yeah.
We also have, apparently Tailgate saw Back to the Future 2 and he wants a hoverboard and he has a hoverboard.
Yeah, Tailgate's love for the Back to the Future franchise, is noted in that issue and the next couple as well.
Yeah, as this one kind of closes out, like you said, you got Ratchet basically saying goodbye to the whole crew and things like that. And...
without saying goodbye, which is interesting, because, he never really says it to anybody except for First Aid.
Yeah. I'm just loving the art in this. The art in this is so good.
Yeah, the art in both these volumes is fantastic. I'll get into specific panels. I've almost given up talking about Alex Milne's artwork just because it's always so fantastic. You could just have a podcast about how good his work is.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, he's spelled a few times in this trade. Volume 1, which I said was really good, was by Sakamoto again.
Mm-hmm.
Or not volume 1, sorry, issue 1. One was actually Brendan Cahill.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't matter who's on the artwork. Try not to even bother pointing out Milne's great work now. But the other groups on this, Sakamoto, we'll get into it with issue 44, but there's some work that he does that I absolutely adore. So, yeah. Cahill's art in this issue is really good.
Yeah, Cahill's art in this is really good because he has, at least what I feel in certain panels and certain characters, he has a very specific G1 style to his art a little bit without being, oh my god, this has to be G1, we have to show you that it's G1. Like, the panel close to the end of the issue here where it's Brainstorm and Nautica. Brainstorm, he's... a little bit bigger and a little bit more teal than green than he was in the old animated series, but it's still very much that Cyclonus with his sword and his hab suite, just, you know, classic Cyclonus. And then the other panel I liked was the one at the end where Rodimus looks like he's on fire, where he says, "That's everything, every last piece."
Well, it's not Rodimus that's on fire. They're burning the time cases.
Oh,
slash
that's
destroying them.
Okay, well,
with the exception of the Ravage Steals one, which is important much later on, of course.
Right, yeah, Ravage Steals one. Okay, so they're burning the time cases. Well, the way that the panel is, it looks like it's not Rodimus and Ratchet, or is it Ratchet? No, it's Perceptor. It's not Rodimus and Perceptor standing upright next to a fire. It looks like, well, I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, it almost reminds me of the Rodimus scene when they're in space. Just hitch a ride. Yeah, and of course, Ravage has to steal a time case, as always. I liked 44. I think 44, or not 40, 40, 40, I should say.
40,
oh, crap.
Yep.
Yes. Sorry. I like 40's art a lot. I like how the story is developing. I like how Roberts is able to mix all of the characters and make them, and he's done this for all the entire series, obviously, but it just felt like everything was super connected in 40, like there was no disjointed storyline. I don't always feel that there is a disjointed storyline in certain comics, and Roberts obviously works his best to not to have everything meld together as one cohesive story, but there are times where I have felt kind of lost at certain points. But with issue 40, I did not feel that at all. So in 41, what do we got going 40, on in 1?
41 and 42 are just a two-part, in a lot of ways, almost a one-off. Mm-hmm. In terms of major developments, I mean, Thunderclash joins the crew, mm-hmm. The greatest Autobot who ever lived. That's what he's called repeatedly, I'm just saying. And the other one, too, is we get to Velocity joins as our new sort of chief medic for the Lost Light. Well, between her and First Aid. First Aid, of course, has to leave later on for Combiner Wars, which is the real reason why this happened.
Velocity happens. Showed up, yeah.
Anyway, although to be fair, in the end it worked out because I really like Velocity, but...
Yeah, Velocity is very cool.
But, yeah, she's not given a whole lot to do here. Basically, to sum it all up, Thunderclash is dying.
Yeah.
And by the way, you mentioned how people can hate Rodimus. He's also really, really petty since, you know, he tries to have a celebration and hits the we've achieved something for finding out that Thunderclash is dying.
That's a gong right there. Yeah. Rodimus is the new host of the gong show. I got to say, though, I got to go back a couple of panels to when we first go into Swerves here. It's creepy as hell to me seeing Ravage in a bar. I mean, it's just so creepy.
Anyway, so turns out Thunderclash is essentially being leached off of mm-hmm. by personality ticks, which are draining him and slowly killing him. But they're injured by characters that are charismatic or have a strong charisma about them. And so in the end, they're killed when Megatron and Rodimus appear at the same time, as well as Thunderclash being there. So in terms of overall stuff, I've mentioned the effects on the series completely. Aside from that, it's more of a character story. We get an awful lot of Nightbeat in this. There's a fair amount of Getaway in this. There's some nice moments early on, too, between Megatron and Rodimus. I liked that Rodimus, through Megatron's, you know, taking stock line from the sixth trade back at him, So I liked that bit, or that callback.
The best line, the best exchange between the two of them. Having said that, it looks as if his daring do... It, don't even say it. Is daring done. I love that. I think that is so awesome. And it just shows how different these two are leading Lost Light or not leading the Lost Light.
I guess, but again, it's another, you know, sign that Rodimus is a really shitty captain.
My love for Rodimus will show a little bit more later, specifically in the next, not in the next, one's 42, in 43, oh my god, 43. 43 might be my favorite out of this whole trade. So yeah, like you said, we get a lot of Nightbeat here, which, he's one of your favorite characters.
Yeah.
We get Nautica, and who is with Nautica and Skids. I was going to say it's also we get Nautica and Firestar as well, and this is the first time Firestar has been used in a long time.
Yep.
So that's interesting because they're at this dance party thing
that's being held in Thunderclash's honor on board the V Vitalis.
Yeah. Please explain to me why Minimus always gets out of the Magnus armor.
A lot of the time it's just a matter of convenience. I mean, later on it's because he needs to be smaller and the Magnus armor's too large. But in this case, it's probably nice to actually be able to walk around once in a while, too, though.
No, and I understand that, and that's fine. I mean, up until we learned that the Magnus armor was just armor, it was not an actual bot, until we learned Minimus's whole story, I was like, okay, well, Ultra Magnus is a little too big. And that's the other thing.
In terms of this, they didn't expect to be, you know, attacked on board an Autobot ship.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, and I've talked about this before. We see outs, not in this issue, but we've seen outside shots of the Lost Light. I guess everything is bigger on the inside because that ship looks a hell of a lot smaller than it is for the most part. Looking at it, you know, from the outside, it just doesn't look like it can hold 200 people.
Well, they're not people. They're transformers.
You know what I mean.
Fine. Anyway, I don't know. The cutaways in volume... Geez, I think it was volume 6... Mm-hmm. Where portions of this ship go missing, though, the ship was definitely large.
Yeah, no, I understand that. It is. I'm saying that, but when certain artists, I don't think it's Alex or I don't know, but just when it's shown as, like, out in space or if it's docked on a planet, it looks really small. It doesn't look as big as it actually is.
That's because a planet's really big. Especially one for the Transformers, which has to be default be really big.
Yeah. The to-be-continued part of this issue as we get to the end here is Nightbeat and Getaway find these scraplet-type things.
Yeah, in Volume 1, it's the ticks that I mentioned.
Yep.
That have laid on the corpse... The now corpse of Countdown, their eggs or something like that, as they mention.
Yeah. I like 41. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun. I think it has a lot of good moments in it, especially with Megatron and Rodimus showing how different their leadership styles are. And 42 has Ravage on the cover, which is kind of cool.
Ravage guarding the corpse of Nightbeat.
Damn, dude, you died.
Nightbeat was already dead, so I was pretty sure he wasn't going to die in this trade again. Anyway.
Okay, so what do we got for 42?
I already summed it up.
Oh.
Remember, I did them both at once.
Yes.
this was a pretty easy sort of two-parter to sum up. I mean, in terms of the overall story, not a lot happens. This is just... I can understand the people who weren't fans of these two issues and the next one, because in terms of... they don't have an awful lot of effect on the overall story. There's not a lot of arc stuff here, with the exception of some character development and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite side of that, I mean, they're meant to be kind of fun. They're obvious. It's obvious to me, anyway, that Roberts had fun with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, this one, for example, ends with a Quantum Leap reference, and the next trade is just near consistent references to different shows and films and stuff over time.
Yeah.
And I think it's fun for him to do the pop culture thing once in a while. I mentioned it before that my problem with some of the pop culture references in other Transformer comics, especially by the humans, are it's sort of flavor of the month stuff that 10 years from now is probably not going to be remembered. Roberts kind of does the opposite in that here, you know, he references Back to the Future quite a bit, and he references Quantum Leap. He references stuff that's more than 10 years old that has already kind of stood the test of time. And if you don't catch some of the references, particularly in the next issue, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Which works a lot better than having BlackRock spout really silly memes and that kind of thing from the internet.
I mean, we've known from day one, ever since we've met Swerve, that Swerve is an Earth junkie. Swerve loves everything to do with Earth, all the pop culture, everything else. And having the pop culture references come out of him makes it a hell of a lot funnier and makes it make a hell of a lot more sense than it does, some idiot human who wants to destroy the universe.
A human who's actually a Cybertronian, which ends up making it make less sense in the end, but whatever.
Yeah, and I got super confused when we go from... because the subcover for 42 is how the... issue 42 ends in the trade, and it's Nautica dancing at the dance party, and the issue 43 cover that they show is Cyclonus and his hollow
avatar.
And then we see Where the Meets the Eye, number one, and I'm like, wait, what? And then I realize, oh, Tailgate's reading the comic.
Yeah, so 43 is probably the most self-indulgent issue
it is.
I think Roberts has ever done, and it's just chock-filled with different references and that kind of thing. There's some really good character moments within it, but I can understand why people who just don't like this sort of thing or just want them to stick to the story wouldn't like it, but I really enjoyed it.
No, this issue is amazing. I love this issue.
So the storyline's, again, pretty easy to sum up here, where basically Swerve has created an entire kind of planet out of his holo avatar as he's dying. And, yeah, they send different auto... well, they send the entire crew of the Lost Light down to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And to find him and figure out what's wrong.
Yep.
And that's kind of it. We end with some fairly important stuff as we discover that in a whole bunch of callbacks to stuff from Last Stand of the Wreckers, even, as far back as that Swerve was hit with a bullet from Agent 113, who's infiltrated the Decepticon Justice Division, which contains warnings that we'll get into next issue. So anyway, in terms of stuff in this issue, though, I loved pretty much everybody's Holo Matter avatar is great. I love that Skids, by the way, each time is a different doctor from Doctor Who.
Yep.
A reference to the fact that, you know, Skids can't remember his past and that kind of thing. I like that Nightbeat Holo Matter avatar is essentially Idris Elba. And Megatron's was really
Megatron's neat too. Awesome. The older
Yeah, older person. I liked his exchange with Nightbeat when, you know, he cuts himself and says, fragile creatures, and Nightbeat says, ah, here we go, just because they're weak doesn't mean... And Megatron adds, you know, I didn't say weak, I said fragile. It's very different.
The first time I saw... And have we seen Tailgate's Hollow Matter avatar before?
Yes.
Okay, it's been a while, so I don't remember, so... As soon as I saw him again, I'm like, hey, look, it's Toad from Super Mario Brothers. Oh, God. I love Cyclonus' line to him, I told you to stay off Tumblr.
Yeah, Cyclonus has my favorite, other favorite line in this issue, which is he actually tells a joke to Skids. He says, you know, everybody came looking for you, everybody on board the Lost Light. It hurts them to project this far, even though it means putting their lives at risk. They're all out there, spread out across the city, desperate to find you. You know, Swerve says, really? And Cyclonus says, yes, they need to know where you keep the keys to the bar. It's a really good line. And obviously my favorite bit in this entire thing was the cheers slash Swerve Swerve's
opening credits.
Opening, yeah. As a big fan of Cheers, that worked really well for me. And I think I mentioned this last recording, that there's a really good song somebody has created using the lyrics from this.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. It is very funny you mentioned that, because after I saw the opening credits, and then later in the issue, after seeing the song in the issue... I went out and I had to find it, so we're going to play it for you folks right now.
Making your way on a quest today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all that war stuff sure has helped a lot. Maybe one day we'll find the knights, but till then you want to go down to D-Deck and to Swerves. You'll have more fun than you deserve. You wanna go where Megs won't go, where the drinks all taste the same. You wanna go where Ten can't even say your name. You wanna go where Megs won't go, where the drinks all taste the same. You wanna go where Ten can't even say your name.
Can suck it, yeah. So there you go, folks. The More Than Meets the Eye Cheers theme song. What I love about this is Rodimus. It has to be Rodimus. Between him and Megatron, oh my God. It is just so cool between the two of them. And like you said earlier about all the Hollow Matter avatars and seeing them and everything else, I just wish there was more. Like, I wish we honestly had more of this, because I think this is super fun. I'm not saying it has to be every issue. I'm just saying that...
No, it's just it's hard to find reasons why they would actually, you know, need them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of the issue, this isn't the Sean series where they're trying to keep under the radar or anything like that. But I mean, I don't know, Roberts has done well finding reasons to use them. I mean, find a reason to use Whirls again pretty soon next trade. For example,
Rodimus is, to me, he's a cross between Marty McFly and Clark Kent, because he's got the vest. And he's also got, like, the shirt open with his Rodimus red shirt underneath it.
He's basically a walking embodiment of the 80s.
Yeah. Which doesn't surprise me, considering, you know, Judd Nelson. So, there's that. Megatron, he... I don't know who he reminds me of. A almost like an old Frank Castle. You're probably going to kill me for that, but...
Not blocky enough. I've seen old Frank Castle repeatedly.
Okay, well... yeah, but this whole issue is just so fun. And I think that's what this series needed after 41 and 42, because it was so heavy with story. And that's not a bad thing. But just so fun.
I'd argue it's probably more welcome given what's coming forward with 50. Not to mention the backstory stuff involving Skids that's coming up. And issue 44 is kind of... Issue 44 is also a little sort of different. Doesn't necessarily give a huge amount in terms of plot, but alternatively, it's a really good issue and a really good sort of character issue. So yeah. 44, they discover the planet of the Necrobot, which he was mentioned... he showed up and was first mentioned in the second trade, which introduced the DJD, because it's brought up by the scavengers in that. So anyway, the Necrobot he basically gives last rites to Transformers as they die.
Yeah.
And yeah, so we find out about him. That's sort of the crux of it. The other thing is this entire season has been dedicated to Megatron reaping what he's sown. And yep. We see a major example of that in this issue as well. But anyway, we pick up with, in particular, Chrome Dome and Rewind want to go to the Necrobot's planet to find out what happened to Rewind's previous love, Dominus Ambus, hopefully once and for all. And Rodimus is actually against it. By the way, it's Megatron that convinces them to go on it, and as he tells Ravage, you know, why rush sort of headlong into his death.
Yeah, and that's interesting for Megatron, where Rodimus doesn't want it, won't want them to go, and Megatron does. I think that's very fun. Again, seeing how the two of them differ in their leadership styles. Who is the artist on this one again? Off the, as I know, this is not Alex.
No, this one was. I'm gonna have to look it up again. Yeah, this was one of the Sakamoto ones, and okay. His artwork in this is amazing, particularly the final sort of splash work, where so one of the issues is in front of each of the Transformers statues or gravestones, depending on whether they're dead or alive, are flowers, and the flowers represent each one is made up of roughly a dozen sparks.
Yeah.
And each one represents, you know, who was killed either by that character or on that character's owner or orders. Bleh. And, of course, the final page is Megatron in a field of them, realizing, again, you know, how much death he's responsible for. And each one of them is a dozen each, so...
Yeah, that's not good, Megatron.
Well, I mean, he's responsible for the death of billions.
Well, obviously, yeah.
In the Transformers series, not just Transformers, but organics, and he's committed genocide before, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's killed a lot of people. And I liked that storyline. The other two sort of plots here involving things are Chrome Dome and Rewind discover that... Well, actually, first, I'll note that Nightbeat has a conversation with the Necrobot. The Necrobot is extremely surprised to see Nightbeat, considering that nobody knew what happened to him, just that he was probably dead, but nobody knew.
Yeah.
And they discover that there's a list of Transformers who nobody knows exactly what happens to them. Nightbeat is on it, and Dominus Ambus is also on it, so in theory he could be alive somewhere.
Yeah, he could be. This whole gravesite part of the issue reminds me of Dark Awakening. When they go to the Autobot crypt.
Yes, I know. I'm just trying to figure out exactly how it's...
That's no. The fact that we see the gravestones with their names on them, and then the statues of... But that's all I'm saying is the way that the gravestones are, even though in the comic they're holograms showing who died, whereas in the cartoon series they were actually physical statues.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's what it reminded me of.
I guess. Anyway.
Okay. Volume 8 was really good.
Yeah. I mean, it's punctuated with two absolutely fantastic issues in this.
Mm-hmm. It is. I think my favorites out of this trade are probably 40, 43, and 44.
For me, it was, the first and last.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, not first and last. Sorry, second and last.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Ratchet's goodbye issue, and obviously the stuff on the Necro World, which becomes far more pertinent to later on.
Yep, absolutely. So what would you rate 0 to 5 for Volume 8?
You know what? Even with some stuff that's up and down, I'm going to give it the 5.
Yeah, I've got to give it a 5, too.
It's one of the trades I read most often out of all the... All the More Than Meets the Eye trades, and each of them I reread and reread exceptionally often. So,
and even though there were a number of artists, and there will be a number of artists in the next trade, not just Alex, it's very rare for me to say that all of the art, because it's all from different artists, was all really great, and it was, because it had a continuous... It kind of kept Alex's continuous style. Like, you didn't see characters off model or any... Yes, they're in different art styles. They're not solely in Alex's art style, but...
The next trade keeps the same three, at least.
Yeah.
We start with Milne did 45 and 46, then Cahill does 47, and Sakamoto coordinated on 48 and 49, so...
Yeah. So, absolutely love that.
I ordered this traitor destroyed!
I thought I'd leave the pleasure of deactivating the miserable traitor to you. Besides, he might have information about the Autobots.
Yes, we shall interrogate him. Even if it's not informative, it will be fun.
You traitor!
Ouch!
That's one thing I will say for Cyclonus. He administers a good interrogation.
Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. For action, comedy, mayhem, and more, read it now at Decian.com. DASIEN.com.
If you're gonna ride, Dano, ride in style.
Getting into Volume 9 with Issue 45.
We see the return of the Scavengers, as it's supposed to be pronounced. But anyway, I prefer to just do Scavengers because it's easier to say. Oh boy. So this one ended up actually having a lot of controversy regarding it. mostly because the scavengers, aside from Misfire, display a really shitty attitude towards somebody with mental disabilities, which is Grimlock.
Right.
So basically our storyline in this is the scavengers get an offer from somebody for Grimlock. He wants to buy him because this character is running, as we'll find out later, a horrific operation and needs help, you know, guarding him from somebody. And so the scavengers end up taking a vote on whether or not to keep Grimlock or to sell him off. In the end, you know, the vote is to sell him off. They just because Misfire gets outvoted on it. Yeah, so like I said, there is a... And this is one of... Alright, this is one of the problems with taking one part of an arc-based thing and deciding on how you feel about it. And it's funny that this came out roughly the same time as Nick Spencer's Captain America, where people were up in arms because of the whole Captain America working for Hydra all this time angle, but it was people who hadn't read any of the story leading up to it, so they didn't know anything about how they had built to it. This is the opposite issue of people became upset at the depiction of treatment towards somebody with a mental disability before reading the second part, where, you know, in particular, Croc figured out that what he was doing was wrong.
Right.
And the way he was looking at it was wrong, and everybody, you know, ended up feeling bad. But anyway, so back to the actual issue.
My favorite part in 45 is the real toys on the grass.
I just like that page with each sort of story of what they were up to, and each one is exceptionally silly. The other stuff I liked was there's a cute G1 reference when the anthropomorphic principal slams into a volcano, which is, you know, deliberately drawn like the one the Ark slammed into. It was nice to see Grimlock and co. again, and so to see what they were up to. It's always fun to kind of visit the scavengers every once in a while. I think it's smart to not necessarily focus on them for a while.
Yeah. They're those kind of characters that you can spotlight them, but don't...
Yeah, I'd be afraid if they spent significant time with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we end the issue with the character whose name I can't remember is, hey, he's a one-off. I mean, he just dies in this, and it's his first appearance, so...
Well, at least we didn't get used to him, you know.
Gets killed by the person who was chasing him, who we find out is the new Terrest enforcer. And it's Fort Max.
Yeah.
Yay, Fort Max, Fort by the Max. Way. My second favorite Autobot. Behind Nightbeat. What? That was notable. He's always been one of my favorite characters. I've always liked the fact that both this series and the original G1 comics kept him relatively normal-sized. Just because it's impossible to have characters interact with him when he's the size of an actual city.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Yep. No, so, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, holy crap. Yeah, not having him be the size of a city was a very smart thing, I think.
Well, it's difficult to utilize him as a character. I mean, I love Metroplex, but he's just kind of there versus being an active sort of participant in storylines and that kind of thing.
Yeah, unless you're having Windblade talk to him, but yeah.
And even then, there's this weird one of the things I never liked about the animated series is if a Transformer was large, they were automatically dumb as a brick.
Mm-hmm.
There was one exception, which of course was Computron, but everyone else, you know, as soon as they were large, they could barely speak or they were just stupid. And that was kind of annoying. You know, Triptychon could barely talk. Metroplex could barely talk. Max had one line in the entire series, although he only appeared in the last episode. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, getting back to it, the next issue continues right where we left off. Max wants to arrest the scavengers. He detects Grimlock, although with some help, in their ship and wants to bring everybody in.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, the scavengers trick him into leaving. Now, the major things in this issue are, we find out that the illegal operation in question here is they're taking existing Transformers and domesticate them, and Demas sort of turned them into toys so that other people could do bad things to them and essentially torture them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the entire universe hates Transformers. And it keeps them alive just enough to feel pain and be aware of what's being done to them. So that's awful. And yeah. Unfortunately, we'll get to more of that much later on.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite lines in this is only because I can't stand it, but one of the who is it that fires on? Somebody fires and we have the choom choom effect. And one of the characters says, "Gotta love the choom choom. If you ever say that again, I'll turn these guns on you."
Well, it's misfire to crankcase.
Okay, misfire and crankcase. Yeah, I gotta disagree with Misfire. I hate it. It was nice when they referenced it once to reference the old Marvel comic, but they constantly have used it ever since, and it pisses me off.
Constantly?
I see Choom Choom in these comics all the time. In both Rid and More Than Meets the Eye, over the entire series.
Well, you need some sound effects.
Yeah, you can come up with better ones. Anyway.
Can you?
Yes, you can.
No, I've watched the original Batman series. Trust me, there's not many great sound effects. Anyway, some other things of note here. I liked the fact that the Wreckers, again, are depicted as not exactly being the nicest of groups. We see what happened to Croc's squad, finally, and they were killed and sort of, like, torn apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, another theme of both Transformers series has been that the Autobots and the Decepticons are not exactly, their hands aren't clean on either side.
Yeah.
Other things, the continuing development of Fort Max and the rehabilitation here is good.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, he learns that not all of the Decepticons are bad, and maybe he shouldn't, you know, just immediately assume they're evil and want to kill them. You know, he gets a brief conversation with Rung at the end of the issue as well, talking about it. Probably the biggest takeaways from this issue, though, are the prepare, confront, repel, and the insignia that's made its appearance quite a lot in More Than Meets the Eye. But this time, we are at least something happened with Grimlock and these, whatever they are. They might be Cybertronian, they might be aliens, who knows. And we get a brief sort of glimpse of whatever the heck it is they're doing. There's something going, they're up to something, and they have been throughout this entire series. And, yeah, so for the first time we get a glimpse of them. And, yeah, that's about it. Aside from Grimlock actually says a proper sentence once. Just saying thanks, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't know why they had to use Grimlock, but okay.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It just, maybe it's because I was not paying attention to the series when this first came out. I mean, yeah, I did read both of these trades before we did this episode, but like I said, it's been a while, so I completely forgot where Grimlock was.
Well, he was found by them on a ship that had that insignia, the Prepare, Confront, Repel, one of the World Sweepers, way back in Volume 2 of More Than Meets the Eye. Grimlock was previously missing from Last Stand of the Wreckers when Cup and Guzzle went to rescue him on Garrus 9, which he was imprisoned in because of the Maximum Dinobots trade. Since Grimlock was a war criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm good.
Yes, you are. So we get to 47, and 47.
So 47 and 48, a storyline I like to call Fuck Getaway, I Hope He Dies.
Yeah, before you get too far into this, we got to talk about the cover. Oh my god, Cyclonus and Getaway. Fighting over Tailgate.
So, one thing I haven't brought up much is, throughout the series, for whatever reason, Getaway has subtly and slowly kind of become closer to Tailgate.
Mm-hmm.
This issue is the payoff of that. And, yeah. Oof, I don't know where to start with this one. So, Getaway, Atomizer, and Whirl, it turns out, are the ones, well, I mean, Atomizer and Getaway are presumably the ones, well, not presumably, one of them is who Whirl was talking to way back in the sixth trade after attacking Megatron.
Right.
And they're the ones, you know, trying to get Megatron kicked off the Lost Light or killed.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, as it turns out, they'll have help. We'll find out about that much later. God, I hate Getaway now. So, in this issue, they are using Tailgate and, to a certain extent, Cyclonus, but mostly Tailgate, to fake do neurosurgery on Megatron.
Yeah.
In the hopes that Megatron will awaken and kill Tailgate, which is what nearly happens, at which point security, who is mentioned to be fairly gun-happy, will just, you know, kill Megatron.
Yeah.
So they're using Tailgate and his feelings for Cyclonus, which is mean and a fairly terrible thing to do. I'll say, I mean, Getaway doesn't get to explain his actions until the 10th trade.
Mm-hmm.
Their reasoning isn't wrong. Megatron's a horrible monster who deserves a lot of what he gets, but their methods are obviously terrible.
Yeah.
And in the process of this, they use Skids' nudge gun to erase Whirl's memory, but not before he can warn Cyclonus, who saves Tailgate from Megatron by he kicks Ravage, and then he takes a piece of equipment and just absolutely clocks Megatron with it.
Mm-hmm.
And stabs him with his sword.
But yeah, that was a little intense there. I really did enjoy it. I thought that was great.
But in the end, while running from security, who definitely have itchy trigger fingers, Cyclonus dies in the presence of Tailgate. And I remember when I read this issue feeling miserable by the end of it. I'm glad this is included in the middle of the trade because, I don't know, I really liked Cyclonus.
Yeah, I think we all really liked Cyclonus. I mean,
don't worry, he comes back in the next issue. But anyway, yeah, at the time, I didn't know that. And so, yeah, I was really ticked off at Getaway and Atomizer. And it's interesting because I mentioned it, when did I mention it? Either a trade or two ago, two or more trades ago, that anytime Whirl and Cyclonus get the chance to interact, it's great.
Oh, yeah.
And their conversation in this, mostly because they are both so emotionally stunted and have so many problems emotionally, their conversations, I don't know, they just, everything kind of pours out. And that was good. I loved the finale to this, too, where, you know, Whirl asks him why he came to see him about his things with Tailgate. And he tells him that, you know, everybody else would tell me what they thought I'd wanted to hear. I'd be Tailgate to their getaway. You don't care. You're not afraid of me, and you certainly don't consider me a friend. I came here because I knew you'd tell me the truth, even if the truth hurt. And you did, and it did. And I really liked that. And that's, in the end, Whirl decides that he doesn't like their plan of using Tailgate as a weapon.
Yeah. As I was reading throughout the whole Cyclonus Whirl thing, for anyone that doesn't know, Beatles Diva, her favorite Transformers character ever is Cyclonus. And Lady Wreck, when she's not, you know, in love with the Wreckers, her, one of her favorite characters is Whirl. So I'm like, hey, it's Lady Wreck and Beatles Diva going back and forth with each other. It's hilarious.
I'll note that Cyclonus is, I mean, one of the things I've loved about Roberts, and I know I've mentioned this before, is he takes characters that were either not used originally in Generation 1 or were used very minimally or in one-dimensional roles. And Cyclonus was essentially a bootlick in the Shockwave role for Galvatron, as Shockwave was to Megatron in Generation 1, and really didn't have much of a personality. And this series just really kind of, I don't know, they gave him a number of different things to do in this, and filled in the lines so much better than I ever would have thought possible. Yeah. Especially since he was introduced as not having a whole lot of personality either in the old Shun series, so.
So Tailgate goes boom, essentially.
Yeah, in the end, something happens with Tailgate, but at the time, we didn't know.
I think my favorite part of this, this whole ending, is the panel of where we see the outside of the Lost Light and we see all this rainbow light around it. Oh, that's just so, so great. So issue 48...
comes right after. However, we open with a... we open with Rung talking to Skids about his time at Grindcore, which we know Skids was at Grindcore, and something really awful happened to him. We've never figured out what.
Right.
They discuss it. I suspect Rung has some idea of what happened. We know Chrome Dome knows what happened to him there. And, yeah, so it gets interrupted, but, well, I mean, they end their session, but also Freud, which is a cute reference, because we have Rung and Freud. Get it? They're both psychiatrists. Anyway.
Yes.
Comes on board. In the midst of this, we learn Cyclonus is okay, and Tailgate is tired, but okay after everything. Skids continues to remember things at Grindcore. Meanwhile, we learn that Freud and Rung have a history. Rung actually lost his, I don't know what you want to call it, but his license, whatever, to be a psychotherapist.
And yeah, what's up with that? Well, we know why. I mean, that's, once again, why I love Megatron. because Rung just assumes, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to practice anymore. I'm going to tell everybody I'm not going to practice. And Megatron's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah, although that's next, that's the end of next issue. But anyway, in the end, Freud has Sunder on board. Sunder, who, when he, well, he feeds off of the guilt of Transformers, and when he looks at them, can pretty much turn them inside, well, not pretty much, he does. They literally get turned inside out quite painfully, apparently. So, yeah, he's obviously an outlier, in the same way Skids, Glitch, and others were.
And at least Skids in this has a better story than being an ice cream truck.
Yeah. Never mentioned those movies. So, Skids, we end with a flashback, and it turns out the Commandant, the person in charge of Grindcore, is none other than Tarn.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be noted that Skids was in a cell with the love of Brainstorm's life, and the reason he went back in time to save this person, and it's Quark, who we're introduced to way back in the third trade, because he had a conversation with Nightbeat in the past. But anyway, yeah, he's Skid's cellmate.
Hmm. Interesting.
And the next issue picks up again right after. Yeah, I mean, first of all, we get hints at it, but we discover that by the end of the issue, we discover that Tailgate has become an outlier because of the trauma that he suffered.
Yeah.
Next, we discover Skids' past, which I'll talk about last. Sunder feeds off of a number of the crew and is stopped in the end by Megatron, Rung, and Tailgate. And Megatron, in the end, denounces violence at this point, mostly because he's... a number of issues. The Necrobots, after having Tailgate used against him, that kind of thing, Megatron's pretty much had enough of his violent past and that kind of thing. And that was the first epilogue.
Yeah.
And the big thing I would say in this is Epilogue 2, we discover why Skids got rid of the Matrix that was on his cheek, why he's not a believer, and why he would want to forget his entire past. So during his time at Grindcore, his abilities as an outlier were used to repair the matter transfer / transporter that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, you know, he's given the chance to go off planet to, you know, a better, I guess, a better printer prison. I guess Grindcore sucks, which I guess, which now we know why. But anyway, so they're going to be transferred to a better place. So Skids quickly figures out that it's not a transporter they are in. It is a incineration chamber, and Tarn is melting down the prisoners to create bodies for Decepticons, and he forces Skids to watch as Quark, his cellmate, and all of the other prisoners are melted down slowly and painfully.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
That's very terrible.
I felt miserable for Skids. I finally understood why. I think, I believe it's somewhere in this issue that Chrome Dome essentially mentions, it's either Chrome Dome or Rung, but one of them mentions that if Skids were to ever find out what he did, he would kill himself.
Yeah.
and of course he does, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, between the mental health thing with Grimlock and now everything with Roberts is just, people, these aren't just giant robots.
Yeah, he did a really, like a number of different really good storylines involving it. Yes, definitely with Skids and definitely with Grimlock in the end. And just, yeah, this... So, I mean, first of all, this is another great trade. And this is kind of the mental health story trade. And as well... as well as stories that definitely made me feel things. I mean, this...
There's a lot of emotion here. And before we get too far into the emotional stuff, I have to laugh because of the scene in this issue where it's Megatron facing Sunder. And off-panel we get, "Hey, Bozo, over here." And it's Tailgate, who's going to play catch with the Rod Pod. Oh my god!
Yeah, he crushes Sunder with the Rod Pod.
Yeah! I'm like, oh my god! Ever since the Rod Pod got introduced, I absolutely love that thing.
Man, we're going to get into this in the next trade, I'm sure, but your love of Rodimus, considering what a terrible person he is baffling. I mean, you're not supposed to like him. He is awful in this series. And he's particularly bad in the next trade. But anyway.
Well, we'll see. But I don't know. I just find it refreshing because everybody else is just so depressing half the time, unless you're Swerve. So like you said, the emotional stuff with Rung and the resignation and all that and that epilogue, and then the whole thing with
everything with Skids, yeah.
Yeah, oh my god. Just... Oh.
Luckily, we're not done. Roberts isn't done kicking people with
the
Skids.
Nads. Yeah. Yeah. That's just crazy. But yeah, Volume 9 was emotionally scarring at best. I can't even say it was fun, because, I mean, it is, but it wasn't as fun as Volume 8. It obviously, Roberts obviously wanted us to feel more, to do more, to expand the characters and their stories more and give us the answers, like... We've been waiting for answers for Skids for how long now? Since what, Volume 1 or 2?
Since whenever the first volume.
Yeah, since whenever he came on board the Lost Light. So, now that we've gotten them, damn.
Yeah, one of the things with Barber's writing in particular, for example, is the payoff doesn't always match the setup. And this was one where, for me, the payoff of what Skids' history actually was... managed to match the setup. And, oof, yeah, it's mean
it's
and
rough.
Bad.
Yeah, it's very rough. it is extremely, extremely emotionally charged. And it's one of those things where the story comes together, the art comes together, and it's just so damn good.
Yeah, I mean, so in the end, same as sort of the previous volume, there's just a couple stories in here that absolutely knock it out of the park for me, that raise up any sort of niggling concerns I had, even when I initially read it issue by issue. So, in the end, I pretty much have to give this one a 5. This is one that I don't read as often, mostly because getting kicked in the gonads by Skids is not super pleasant, as well as remembering how miserable I was after Cyclonus, as I thought, you know, died.
Yep.
So thanks for nothing, James. But no, I mean, this is a really good series, and these... issues like the ones contained in this trade just kind of demonstrate to me why this series is so much more than just, you know, robots. And it's also a demonstration to me of why this, the two different comics work really well, and why I actually prefer the post-war stuff to the actual Transformers being at war constantly. I mean, we have hundreds and hundreds of issues of the Generation 1 comics, and pretty much every version of Transformers since, where the Autobots and Decepticons are just at war, and it's constant sort of fighting between the two. But to me, you only really discover characters or discover things about these characters when you see them at rest. And so yeah. it's been fun seeing them in a way that we really didn't get to originally at all.
Yeah, because in every other part of the fiction, they either reference the war, they're in the middle of the war, or they show us pre-war stuff that, you know, right before the war started. Ever since More Than Meets the Eye and Not Reared X-Rated, whatever you want to call it, the Transformers series started way back when, in what, 2011, I think? Yeah, it's 2011, right?
Yeah, 20. I mean, for More Than Meets the Eye started in 2012. So yeah, for the current generation, if you mean IDW, they started in 2007.
No, I mean, I mean, specifically starting with the death of Optimus Prime and then going into either one or the other, More Than Meets the Eye or Robots in Disguise, or going into both of them. Ever since they started these two series, they have shown us stuff that we've never seen before. Government Cybertron with Starscream and Bumblebee and all of that. The Lost Light and the quest for the Knights of Cybertron and all of the adventures that Rodimus and the crew have over the past, you know, 9 trades and 49 issues to this point that we're talking about the trades and the single issues and things like that. It's so original and invigorating to see Transformers stories done without having to call back to anything, really, without having to reference. I mean, they reference stuff, but it's done so fluidly that it isn't a Kevin Smith moment where it's like, hey kids, look, Mark Hamill, applause. Like, it isn't one of those when Roberts references something. I mean, yeah, sure, you could say the Cheers thing kind of is, but that played off very well because he used that as the opening of that issue. And a lot of people, unless you're our age, a lot of people that might be reading that comic that have never seen Cheers before are never going to get it.
Which is depressing.
I know.
Seriously, go watch Cheers. Like, this is like... Cheers is a series that's going to be watched, you know, years and years from now. It was on Netflix. It's not anymore. Or wait, no, sorry. It's not on Canadian Netflix. It was still on yours. I think we talked about this at one point.
Yeah, I think we talked about this off air.
Boo, put it back on. What
the hell? Both Cheers and Frasier are on American Netflix. And I am up to episode 9 of season 1 of Cheers at this point.
Yeah, I rewatched it, thankfully, before it came off Netflix. I didn't know it was leaving or anything, but yeah.
More Than Meets the Eye, so fun. You know, both of them, like we've said in the Robots in Disguise episodes, that series has some issues, and More Than Meets the Eye has a few issues as well, but it's not as...
Well, as you've said, it's
more so Barber has to... They use that series to set everything up. If they're doing anything, big major event or any kind of toy thing or whatever.
They're very different in scope. And the other thing is, I mean, I can understand why people... You know, there are people that just don't really enjoy More Than Meets the Eye. And much, you know, prefer the other one. Part of that, too, is More Than Meets the Eye is definitely a character-driven series. And, you know, you either like the characters or like the fact that there are elements of it that move a lot more slowly, but are in order to set up a character to be in a certain place or position, that kind of thing. I personally I love character-driven stories. You know, I mentioned I love The Shield, I love Breaking Bad. You know, both are very slow kind of burns towards building characters up or tearing them down.
I personally think the shield goes a little bit faster than Breaking Bad, but that's just my personal opinion.
It depends. Yeah, it definitely depends on the season. But anyway,
yeah.
Someday we'll have to do a Shield podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Since we both watched it, but
yeah, absolutely. More Than Meets the Eye, volumes 8 and 9. The story is progressing nicely. Everything is going according to his plan, I assume. You keep saying I'm going to eventually hate Rodimus, and so far...
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say you're going to hate him. I'm just saying that he's not... I'm surprised that you like him, because, I mean, he's not a particularly likable character. This is one of those things I wish someday I'd get the opportunity to talk to Roberts about whether or not Rodimus is supposed to be liked, or if he just sort of is. I mean, it gets pointed out to him in Volume 10... by Rewind, and completely accurately, that he's an enabler. He uses people and doesn't care about the consequences, and he's just not a particularly good person. I mean, one of the other issues is he has not grown either. I mean, there were elements of it in the fifth trade that it seemed like he was going to. And I guess this is a nitpick I have with More Than Meets the Eye. There were elements in the fifth trade, it seemed like he was finally growing up. He came clean about Overlord, he tells, you know, Magnus/Minimus all of the things he's done wrong. But then he immediately kind of goes back to being the same user/not-great person. He's easily manipulated again, because he was manipulated into bringing Overlord on board when Prowl basically said, well, you know, unless you're scared to have him on board, you know, they use the Marty McFly are you chicken method to trick him into letting him on board. But he's just not, he hasn't grown up a lot, and he hasn't sort of maintained that. I mean, he displays outright joy at
the most inappropriate times.
Yeah, at the death of Thunderclash. And, you know, he rushes into fight Sunder the same way that he sort of rushed into Overlord, which didn't work out well for him. So he clearly didn't learn from that, and it doesn't work out well for him here. He ignores his crew's needs in terms of Chrome Dome and Rewind wanting to go to the Necrobots planet, and it's Megatron of all people agreeing to do it. Now, Megatron has his own selfish reasons for it, but
yeah. The more and more I see of Rodimus over the series to this point, and more you talk about it...
He definitely is the fun one, don't get me wrong.
But
not a great guy.
I said earlier that he's based, and you said this, his hollow avatar is basically anything to do with 80s... culture, movies, whatever. I said he's a combination between Marty McFly and Clark Kent Superman. And looking at it now, and looking at it as how you're explaining it, he's essentially John Bender from Breakfast Club. He's essentially Judd Nelson. Nelson's character from Breakfast Club.
Yeah, which I think is intentional, too.
Obviously, yeah. Because I think Roberts wants us to hear Judd's voice coming out of this character. And honestly, I do.
And obviously, I mean, if you like him, that's fine. I'm not trying to say, you know, there are definitely people that like Rodimus. There's quite a few that don't as well. It's probably 50-50. I'm taking comments sections words for it. Maybe that's a bad idea.
I'll tell you right now, out of all the friends I have, there's only two of us that absolutely loves Hot Rod / Rodimus, and no matter what he's done.
So all of your friends.
All of my friends essentially hate the guy, except for two of us.
No, I was thinking you only had two. Oh, never mind. Anyway.
Funny guy.
Usually, I insinuate we only have two listeners, so it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah, that's true. So it's me and Proto Man that are the two biggest Rodimus fans that I know.
And to be fair, I like Rodimus in this series. I like him as a character. I don't like him as a person in this series, but I definitely like the character enough, if that makes any sense. He's important to the story, and he fits perfectly into More Than Meets the Eye. I'm not trying to make a case that I would ever want to get rid of him or anything. I like him enough that I'm buying the third-party Rodimus that's coming out because it's the only Rodimus anyone's made that looks like the More Than Meets the Eye version.
The More Than Meets the Eye version, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Hasbro ones, they're good, but they don't look a lot like More Than Meets the Eye.
Yeah.
I've noticed that lately, that I've been buying Transformers and third-party Transformers based on their accuracy, in particular to Milne's designs of them.
Yeah.
And part of that's because I love the books. I love some of these characters, like Fort Max, you know, the warden that Perfect Effect did is one of my all-time favorite Transformers, period.
Mm. They even had, it's one thing we didn't mention, they even made them, I believe it was either in Volume 8 or Volume 9, because I haven't read, I haven't bought Volume 10 yet. They even mentioned Cerebros. I thought that was hilarious.
Cerebros is in the Titan Wars trade, which is essentially, it contains the, so yeah, they mention him, but we actually get to see him.
Okay.
In a later one, he's part of the finale of Titan Wars, which takes part on Luna 2, which is written by Roberts.
Okay.
Titan Wars, yeah, the next event book.
Is that Titan's Return?
Sorry, Titan's Return, yeah. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up with Prime Wars, which is coming up.
Okay. Oh, so much stuff coming up, folks.
Hey, at least you read Secret Empire, which is, first of all, it was surprisingly good, but unfortunately, second of all, it takes place in 5 freaking parts. And it's the number 0. Like, it's not even the actual series, it's the setup, and it's 5 parts, which, ugh, come on. Damn it, Mark.
Two words that we will never not hear from any of us, folks. Damn it, Marvel. All right. I think that's going to do it for us here on the Pullbags Back Issue Classics for More Than Meets the Eye, Volumes 8 and 9. Where can the people find you online, sir?
At Nightbeat on Twitter.
I am at TF2 and Mike on Twitter. You can also follow at The Pullbag, at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Join us next time when we will be capping off our More Than Meets the Eye and Not Rid discussion with Volume 10 of both series. So we're going to do 2 trades, 1 podcast, as we have been doing, but it's going to be Volume 10s for both series as we cap it off, and then I will lay out the plan for the future coverage, because we've got 3 different series that are currently running between Optimus Prime, Till All Are One, and The Lost Light. So there will be more Transformers coverage coming here inside the Pullbag, but stay tuned next week for the finale, and then after that we start Batman Month for this year. Make your greatest game to the comics, and we will catch you next time.
And use the power of the Matrix to light our darkest hour.
It's a pity you Autobots die so easily, or I might have a sense of satisfaction now.
You got the touch! You got the
power! Arise, Rodimus Prime.
Optimus.
Yeah!
No!
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for, and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching Geekcast Radio Network. Send us an email feedback at GeekCastRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter at GeekCastRadio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.